Hello, 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 and welcome to the My Empty Hands podcast. I am Reggie Darden, and I have with me Gary R. Gilliam, and we're just going to talk Kenpo and whatever else happens to come our way, but we're just going to have a little conversation about our journeys in Kenpo and where we started and just kind of go from there. Just to kind of give a brief history on me. I started Kenpo in the early mid 90s in what was essentially the Tracy version of Kenpo. Did that for a few years and made it to my green belt, and then I left for the Army. Dabbled a little bit in some Taekwondo and some Hapkido and some boxing. That kind of kept me satiated until I got involved in Capoeira, and I've been doing Capoeira for going on 17 years now. About a couple of years ago, 2 years ago, I refound my love for Kenpo and started training again. Slapped on the old white belt and worked my way back up to just recently promoted to green belt. So just moving right along, and it makes it easy now because I can just say I'm a green belt in Kenpo, and I have a green belt in this Kenpo, and then I have whatever belt in this Kenpo. Now I can just say green belt in Kenpo, and that makes life easy. So enjoying that. Looking at getting back into some of the other arts, looking at getting back into some Hapkido, and also eyeballing some Kali and some other arts. There's a lot of schools around me to, so I just need to invent the 40 hours a day, and I will be all set there. So that's just kind of a little bit of my background, and as we go along, we'll just, I'll interject whatever I feel is relevant, but we'll see how that goes. So, Mr. Gilliam, let's hear your story. How did you find Kenpo, or I should say, how did Kenpo find you, and how did you get started, and where does that go?
It's funny you asked that. I started the martial arts back in the late 70s as a kid, very young kid. My first art that I trained in was actually Tracy Kenpo. I was there for 2 years, from like 12 to 14, And this would have been a long time ago. My father was really into the martial arts. He was a college wrestling coach. He had been in the military, Vietnam era military policeman. He had done Aikido and Kenpo. He'd done other Kenpo and other with other people. And so, he trained me for about 4 years of my growing up formally. I have a son that I have actually got three arts I teach. I teach a Kenpo karate system. I teach a Hapkido system. And also Korean martial arts in general. I taught my son, my father taught me. My son's black belt under me in the Korean arts. He prefers the Korean arts. He doesn't like Kenpo that much. He's a big, tall, 6'4". and he's not like stringy either. He's he's a big, powerfully built young man, and he's quite good in the Korean martial arts. He likes he heads toward the Hapkido and the Taekwondo. Kenpo was my first art that I trained in, and I've been training now with my master Gary Cox for 21 years. And I started training with him. Now I love Gary Cox. I consider me just a lowly nothing disciple of my master Gary Cox. He's my everything I do is pretty much attempt pathetically to make him proud and do for him. He teaches kind of a hybrid of Parker, Tracy, Japanese karate. He trained with Mike Stone for quite a while. He was in the military, so he teaches kind of an eclectic Kenpo system. Okay. I mean, it's Kenpo karate, but it's it's a hybrid Kenpo karate system. And he calls the system Kiai karate. That's why I call my system Kiai karate integrated fist. But he called his system Kiai Karate. He knows. I've spoken with some of the old timers. They know who he is, and they've seen him at like the internationals and stuff. He was a solid Kempo person. Like we at Kiai try to keep it real humble. You know, the name Kiai has to do with the spiritual energy and all that. We're really big about humility. I mean, we're nothing special. You know, I especially am nothing. My master's something special. I am really nothing. But I really have tried to do the martial arts. I've been with him 21 years. Before I got with him when I got out of the Army. I was in. We've talked about our Army stories. You were a Panama boy.
Got a little time in the you Panama.
You chewed some Panama dirt. I was in Germany and Korea. When I got back from Korea 20-something years ago, I started training with him, and I've trained with him nonstop ever since. I've had other people. I cross-train a lot. I'm what you would call eclectic. I'm a Kempo Karate guy, but I'm more eclectic. Before I trained with him, I had about 20 years of training, and out of that, about 9 was in Kempo, you know, Tracy or Parker Kempo Karate. But I'd also done probably my second art, if I had to say. I've also trained in Japanese Karate, Okinawan Karate, things like that. But mostly I was always in my mind, it was kind of adding that to the Kempo, if that makes any sense. I always consider myself a Kempo guy. I'm built kind of like Parker. I'm like 6'1", and I'm even when I'm before I put on some extra put on a few extra pounds, I've always been a little more heavily built, you know, so Kempo just really naturally took to me. As you can see, I don't know if will the visuals be on it or
this will be just be audio, but audio. For the listeners, we've got a Perfect Weapon poster in the background there, so definitely representing the
I've had Jeff that poster Speakman. Up for years. Jeff Speakman is I was telling you before the thing, I first got into, you know, like every kid my age, David Carradine, Kwai Cheng Kane, you know, that got us kids our age interested into, you know, I was a little kid. My dad would go watch Kung Fu, you know, in 1972, 73. And I'd go in there and I can still remember, you know, that episode where he fights that demon, you know, you know, that where he fights that. Vaguely. It's a real the scary creature, whatever it is.
Kung Fu was a little bit, you know, I'm familiar with it. And I watched it a little bit. It was a little bit before time, but
I was five.
I'm familiar with it.
I was about five on season two, but there was this episode where this real scary, he has like a basic, only thing I compare it to is Trip, you know, where he fights this creature, and it scared me to death at five, but it really got me interested. But if I had two heroes that I really, we were just talking about this beforehand, that I think are just should have had a better movie career in the martial arts, was Jim Kelly off of Enter the Dragon, and he did other stuff, you know. And the other one, of course, is Jeff Speakman. I idolize Jeff Speakman.
I know. For me, you know, seeing The Perfect Weapon is why I got started in Kempo. A buddy of mine, you know, I've always been a fan of the martial arts and martial arts movies, and just, you know, I always wanted to do it. I can't verify this, but the story, you know, when I would ask my father, I would ask my father growing up to let me train in the martial arts, and he would always say no. And he claimed that his reason was that he used to be a bodyguard for Muhammad Ali. And he, you know, at that time,
intriguing.
At that time, martial arts were, you know, starting to get popular in America. He says that some of the other guys that were in Muhammad Ali's employ would talk about, oh, well, like, I'm working on this karate stuff, and I'm learning how to, you know, kill people and, you know, rip their hearts out. And so he always had this idea in his mind that, you know, martial arts were just all about killing. And so he turned me down, but I wore him down. You know, it only took me about 15 years to wear him down. And he finally let me get involved in Kempo. And, you know, I was just enamored ever since. And I actually didn't get to start right away. So, you know, me and my buddy saw The Perfect Weapon and found a school, and, you know, he got signed up and didn't yet have the approval, but I would be at the school from when they opened to when they closed, and I would watch all the classes and stuff, and I would just absorb what I could. And then, you know, my friend, you know, don't tell my instructor, he slipped me a little information here and there, and I had a pretty good sense of, you know, what I was getting into before I actually officially signed up. But I guess it kind of works out in the end, because most of my private lessons, my friend was my instructor. So, so that helped. But yeah, big thanks to The Perfect Weapon for getting me started on this path.
Kempo specifically, it's funny you say it, because Kempo specifically, you know, I was going to say earlier, if I had to choose what, you know, the two arts that are the most influenced me, would be Kempo, Parker Kempo, and Korean martial arts. I trained for 3 years in Korea. And when I say Korean, I want to clarify, I don't mean these modern day Olympic Taekwondo. Korean's a misunderstood art. No, both, I mean, Hapkido is an excellent martial art in itself. I earned my second Dan, I earned in Korea with a Korean master. But but Taekwondo is a lot more, when it's done correctly, I learned it more how, like, I was in the military and I trained more, you know, more the military segment of it. Taekwondo is not the sport stuff you see or the kid stuff you see. It's got a, I don't believe any art is so deadly. I mean, I that's part of my, I don't like any hype in the martial arts. I hate hype in the martial arts. Nobody's so deadly. You know, one of the things we learned in the Army, you can vouch for this, it is so hard to kill somebody. Okay. I mean, you know, we were both, we both had jobs that were, I was a forward observer and you were a commo. So, you know, we were both trained more for realism. People, like, there's instances in combat, people blown in half and still fighting. You know what I'm saying? So the idea that you can kill somebody, I don't like that. But I will say Korean martial arts are far better than people think. Does that make sense? About the strongest opinion I'll ever make about a martial art is I'll never say, like, it's so deadly you can't say. I'll say it's a solid, you know, or quite good, or it has sound principles, you know, because I believe that you can be very effective with martial arts. I have and can protect myself with martial arts. You can, all of us can. But I don't like the hype or the, you know, the mystique of how deadly you are with martial arts. I mean, you can get to where you can hit pretty hard and you can bob and weave and fade and evade and, you know, like, you know, you can get in and get out of a fight, but that's about, there's not a whole lot more. So I get really skeptical if somebody says it's just so deadly, but Korean martial arts are solid, as is Kempo. You know how, I love all Kempo people, and what I'm about to say, I do not mean as a negative thing. What I'm about to say, this is not negative, because I still think even bad Kempo has something to offer. But I do, if you were to see me do it, if one watches me, I tend to be a little harder, more hard. Each technique is more hard. Does that make sense? You know, like if I'm doing a knife and I'm not just whipping it out, I'm doing it harder with each move. I try to do it with some speed, but I do with each move with a, identity with each move. I probably am not as friendly to the super flashy, flippy, fast Kempo. I mean, I can make my hands go very fast, and I understand the point of it, but I'm probably a little more of the hard Kempo. Does that make sense? Do you see what I'm saying?
A little bit more.
I've had some internal Chinese stuff where I just practiced, you know, it helps you get a little more relaxed. So there is something to the relaxed power, but I tend to prefer a little bit more of the karate hardness of Kempo as opposed to the more flashy. But I don't think flashy Kempo sucks either. I don't get into this art sucks or that art sucks. For me, I'm a bigger, larger man. You know, I'm 6'1", and
it's okay. But we can edit that out.
it's okay. No, I'm 6 foot one, and I've lost a lot of weight. I'm starting to lose a lot of weight. I got diabetes. I got real heavy for a while, and I've been losing a lot of weight. But you know, I'm never, even at my thinnest, I'm never what you would call petite. You know, I'm always
no, I'm right there with you.
I'm more of a Parker-ish build as opposed to a, you know, a Bruce Lee build, you know. But I do like to keep, you know, I like Kenpo is a lot better. Like I've seen online, you see people talk negative. I have seen Kenpo work very well in fights, and Kenpo's a quite good art. I don't buy that any art's going to get you killed, and I don't buy that any art's going to kill people. You know, I think that most arts, if they're done right, can have some element of effectiveness. For me, I do have one thing that if I have one way, I get along with most of the Kenpo world and generally the martial arts world in general, you know, if there's one way that I differ or where I have some division is I have developed with my master Cox's permission is the Kenpo karate I teach is just less techniques, just half the techniques, you know, or like, we teach only 70 techniques. I told you about this last time, and they are more jab, cross, hook. We do more than just jab, cross, hook, but they are developed in a combination attack pattern as opposed to the really laid out long and sometimes convoluted. I don't like to use that word. For me, a simplistic minded person like me, they're more complicated than I do. Okay? Say it like that.
Gotcha.
So I've had some people, we also have gotten rid of some of the traditional. I mean, we do some of the traditional Kenpo kata, but some we don't, and we do some of our own. And we only do a total of, or I only do, I only teach, and all of this is my master Cox. Let me do this. I only teach 8 kata total, okay. And of those, some are Parker, and some are stuff developed by Master Cox and Robert Hermanson. You know, he's used most of them in like the Parker Internationals and stuff. But we're very big on simplicity in our system. Okay, that's something, but it still takes, you know, it still takes the comparable amount of time, you know, to get, like if you were to come in and train with me, it would take about the same time, but your time is not going to be spent as much doing just individual self-defense techniques. You'll do some, I mean, you'll learn those. You'll also learn the katas. We have some sets that are ours and some Parker sets. We'll do those, but most of the time is going to be spent on what I call live or hard, you know, hard realistic training, you know, sparring. So it's going to take about the same amount of time, and you're going to be a little bit more hard, not quite so, you know, we still do a lot of the, you know, that stuff, you know, what I just did. But
gotcha.
A lot of, but it's more going to be like, do you see the difference? You see what I mean, it's hard to explain the kinesthetic difference, but
yeah,
we're going to be doing a more of a hard, each technique's going to have more of a hard component, and that it's not going to be as many moves per technique. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I've had some have agreed, some, but I'm very clear that we're not teaching traditional EPAC. I'm very clear on that. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Gotcha.
But,
so for me coming from, or having trained in both sides, or both styles, I'm always curious about schools that, you know, combine or you know, mix and match. Would you say that there is, like, what would you say is maybe the breakdown, you know, this percentage of Tracy, this percentage of EPAC?
Mine specifically?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Here's how I would say it. I would say pretty much it's Parker in principle. You know what I'm saying? Like all of it. Like Gary, like my master Robert Hermanson knew Ed Parker, and he trained with Tom Garrigan. Tom Garrigan taught my master Gary Cox, you know, that kind of thing. What I would say, here's how I explain it. Pretty much all the kata, even the ones that were developed by Gary Cox, are still Parker principles, if that makes any sense. I mean, they're still all Parker, okay? Where I think my system is, the way I teach it, a little bit the way Gary Cox taught it, but I took it to the next level, is I do a lot of my Kihon. Or, you know, the term Kion. You've heard the term Kion. I do a lot of the principles that would be Korean and Japanese karate. Like, for example, when we do like an outward knife hand, I deliberately do more the Japanese, the Okinawan or Japanese component to it. I do it with more of the feel and the flavor and the kinesthesia of that. Or if I do the, single biggest difference between Japanese karate and Korean karate, I don't mean Kenpo, I'm talking about, this is just, Koreans elongate their techniques more. You've done some Taekwondo. They tend to elongate, even their hand techniques, it's a misconception that Koreans do nothing but foot technique. That's not correct. They do a pretty decent amount of hand techniques. The biggest difference is their hand techniques are more elongated for the purpose of, they're more elongated for the purpose of a little bit more distance. You know, they like to keep a little more distance, mid to long range versus the short to tight range of karate and whatnot. So it's all pretty much Parker. The difference is we do a lot of the Kihon or a lot of the basics are from Japanese, Okinawan, or Korean, specifically Korean. I trained a lot in the Korean martial arts. But there are still combinations are still Parker in both, if that makes any sense.
Okay. So would it be, I guess, fair to say the kind of the Tracy part is the smaller percentage and it,
oh, much
it
smaller,
leans
yeah,
more?
Much smaller. I mean, my master trained in some Tracy stuff, and so he adds some of the technique. That's a much smaller part of it. Yeah, it's a little bit, but much smaller part. You know, the exact components, I don't know, but you know, I wouldn't be able to say exactly. Yeah, but yeah, it's a much smaller Tracy. Martin, I mean, he trained some Tracy people, and you know all that. But we're not a Tracy school. We're more into the Parker stuff.
Okay. And then any kind of other arts that are, or maybe some of the other arts that are. Integrated
question. Yes. One of my students is, I trained with him now here in Salt Lake. I trained with him. He's actually, he trained with a world-class Thai, a master, a guy from Thailand. His name was Sokasem Kanthwan. His name is James Foster. He taught me some of the knees and elbows of Thai. And I was learning some Thai principles. I want you to say I'm not a, I've never done any ring Thai or anything like that. I just cross-trained in Thai because I like Thai really well. So he taught me some of the principles that how to implicate or integrate it into Kempo, some of the knees and elbows. But I'm not a Thai person. I want to be clear on that. But some of the you know, the concepts of the elbows and the knees come from Thai. I've trained with some Filipino Kali people, and by nature or by organic nature, Kempo has automatically has some Filipino in it. Like Parker trained the Filipino people. So I integrated some of the Filipino concepts I trained separately. I also integrate into the Filipino components of Parker. And then a lot of it, well, you'll get this. Because, you know, my time in the Army, I learned, I took a lot of the philosophies from the Army, you know, realism and you know, some of the mentality of Army training. I put it into my what I teach. So.
Yeah, that's something that you know I've always said that I like about Kempo. I love about Kempo is that it makes a good base for connecting with other arts and other philosophies, and it just you know fits really well with you know making the art your own and you know not being held to specific traditions, you know, not everything works for every person in every scenario, and you know what setup or what organization, you know, what style works for you is going to be different for me, which is going to be different for the next person. But Kempo makes a really great foundation to feed that exploration and that modification and really fitting things to the individual. So I really like that the not everyone is set on just keeping it a certain way and having that room to grow and to, you know, whatever it needs.
As long, one thing that's very important, as long as you're clear that you're not, now if you're doing Kempo, I don't care what type of Kempo, you need to be clear that you are, like, if somebody is somebody cannot claim to be teaching Ed Parker American Kempo Karate unless he's teaching all of the techniques, you know what I'm saying, like the all the extension, everything. But if somebody is saying they teach a Kempo Karate system based on Parker, that's different. That's, you know, that is for the court of public opinion. But it's very important you're very clear whatever you're doing. You got to be very clear on whatever you're doing.
Exactly. So what did, as far as you know, getting into teaching, was that kind of something that you were always wanting to do, or did it, you know,
You know, that's funny. I have a strange teaching style. How I got into teaching, like I said, I've been doing, if you were to take all my, I'm 56 now, I've been doing about 41 years of martial arts training, you know, take everything. I have an uncle named Steve Bigelow. Now he helped, I don't know if you ever heard of a school called, it's called the Executive Security International, the Bodyguard School. He started
that. Sounds familiar.
Okay, yeah, he started a bodyguard school. And him and my brother, my younger brother, he connected with my uncle Steve in the early 90s. And they trained together he taught my brother for like 5 years. And then we started a system called, they started a system called Eclectic Combat Systems. And basically it was a blend of, it was a very eclectic system. My uncle had been one of the first Huadang Do, you know, you've heard of Huadang Do.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a Hapkido. Yes, okay. He was one of the first Huadang Do people. And he was also doing Muay Thai and Kali before it was really well known. My brother had been a really good wrestler in high school. He'd also been doing martial arts, and he was, he's a high-ranked black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, mm-hmm. and he's a high-ranked, he does Sambo, and he does, he's done some Kodokan Judo stuff. He's pretty high-ranked in his stuff. But the two of them started a school, and they asked me to just be one of the striking instructors. So I was certified under them as a striking instructor. And that's when I first started it, and I really enjoyed it. We had a pretty good-sized schools in Arizona. We had a pretty good-sized school. There was like 20 people at any given time. And I would help teach some of the it was more like a reality-based or hand-to-hand combat. At that point, I had about 10 years. I was 26. I had about 12 years of, mm-hmm. 11 years of various martial arts training. And I enjoyed doing it. And then I've taught a lot of privates. I prefer to teach privates or very small groups. I have taught formal classroom settings. But I prefer, even to this day, I will teach maybe 4 or 5 students at a time, like a very small, but mm-hmm. very, you know, intimate group of students. I love doing that. I love, I don't like the formal classroom teaching setting as much. I have done it, but I don't like it as much. I'd much rather have a small, you know, like maybe 3 people that I teach at a time. Mm-hmm. And I like to kind of mentor them and take them down their path and work with them. I tried doing some online stuff. I'm shying away. I don't do online anymore. I made one big mistake with one person that I don't really do distance teaching anymore. Like if somebody is already a very high advanced rank and they want to cross train with me, they're already a high advanced rank in another system, they want to cross train, I'll cross train with them. But I don't really I don't really do distance training. But most of my stuff is small groups by choice.
Because
I would rather not teach. I would rather not teach at all than have to deal with the crap of classes. You know what I'm saying? I like to teach a very small. I prefer either a very athletic or already trained martial artist to teach. But I can take from the beginning. But I prefer people who already have martial arts skills. You know.
Gotcha. Is there any particular reason why you prefer the smaller classes, or just mainly kind of logistical? Or
I'd have to say when I don't have a lot of patience for people who are just kind of, you know, they kind of want to play around with it, and they kind of do, but they kind of don't. You know, I like, like I have a student, that Muay Thai student, he teaches, actually teaches MMA, teaches MMA classes and stuff. He teaches people in larger groups. I taught him, Kenpo, he taught me, Thai. Some people like doing it. I like very serious people that I can really share what I know, as opposed to a group of people that might or might not get it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I like tailoring each person with their, I like tailoring each person like with their natural strengths or natural weaknesses. I like to see what works for them, how to get it working best for them. And that kind of thing. I love taking somebody from, you know, a lack of knowledge. I've actually taught formally. You know, I've taught in the school, you know, teaching.
Good.
I just really enjoy helping people understand. But I prefer, preferably, I like to work with people that are already martial artists, and I can just add my skill or what I know into there. Mm-hmm. But I can teach both. But you know, I don't make enough money for this teaching to really make a difference. It's not for me for the money at all.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I may make a little bit, but I mean nothing, you know, next to nothing. For me, it is purely the love of the art. I like teaching a very small group of very serious students.
Gotcha. Since kind of touched on it a little bit, it just kind of made me think about. So with the popularity or the growth of MMA, have you seen, like, what kind of changes have you seen with, not just new students, but how students kind of approach taking art now with MMA's popularity versus
the quote unquote
old school?
Okay, that's funny you say it, because you're gonna be surprised. You might be surprised because I really admire and respect MMA quite a bit, actually. But you have to understand where I'm coming from. My father was had been a college wrestling coach, which means you had to be really good. He was a junior college wrestling coach. He had also boxed. He had done military. He had done was in the military, and he'd done like I said, old school Aikido and old school karate. So his mentality, I liked boxing too. I liked wrestling. I wrestled in high school. I did some high school. I wasn't a great high school wrestler, but I've enough to get wrestled 3 seasons. I got enough to understand what wrestling's about. And I liked Thai before it was popular. Does that make sense? What I like about MMA so much is anybody who's good, if you're good from any system, if you're a good Kenpo guy, if you're a good Korean stylist, if you're a good karate, if you're a good karate, whatever style, MMA people are going to give you respect because they understand there's just principles that work. You know what I'm saying? Like, there are just principles that work. I've had a good relationship. I mean, I've had a couple, I put my videos online and stuff. I had a few like, oh, he's fat or whatever though. That technique won't work. I mean, you get some of that, but that's always been said. I mean, that's not the fault of it. It's always since martial arts were in America, everybody was showing how somebody couldn't do that or somebody could. I like MMA. Now I don't do it. I'm just old. So karate works great for me. And it happens to be Kenpo karate is the karate I chose to do. But I don't have, like, I did some Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I got my 3-stripe white belt in it. I liked it. I don't teach grappling. I do not teach grappling, okay? I learned some in the Army. I've worked with some really good grapplers that were seriously good grapplers. My brother is an excellent grappler. I worked with him. I've worked with others. I don't teach it because I'm not good enough to teach grappling. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I probably could teach a basic ground, like get on top and elbow him kind of, but that's, I believe in leaving the experts.
Is that something that you may integrate in the future, as you get more experience?
I integrate it in this way. I integrate it. Like if I get taken down, I'm very glad I've trained enough in grappling. If I get taken down, I am confident I have some, at least some kind of fighting chance. Mm-hmm. But I just like teaching karate. I'm a karate man, through mm-hmm. the, happens to be Kenpo, but I also like Korean karate. I've also done very good old school Korean karate and Hapkido. I like the traditional arts. I do think that well done and correctly done traditional arts of any kind, I don't care if they're Kenpo, I don't care if they're Okinawan, I don't care if they're Korean, if they're done right, they're going to have a lot of the same stuff that works in MMA. It's mm-hmm. the same athletic principles, But I haven't had much of a problem with it. I'm probably one of the few people that I do consider myself a karate guy. I do consider myself more traditional. I love MMA. I think it's a great idea, great con. I mean, I don't like some of the theatrics, like by that I mean people yelling and screaming at each other. There can be, it lost some of the traditional philosophy of the martial arts in some ways, But, I'm a big fan of MMA. I'm a big fan of, I think that the best thing ever happened. But what it also did is it did two things for karate. Either it reminded karate that you need to be open-minded to things like ground fighting. I had wrestled in high school. I knew enough about ground fighting that I knew that, my dad had taught me wrestling as a kid too. I knew enough that if I got taken down even as a kid from wrestling, so I never really had the hostility towards MMA that some karate people, karate people might have. Mm-hmm. And I liked that MMA taught that karate people need wrestling and BJJ and, whatever, Sambo, whatever the grappling art is. But it taught that you needed to open your mind and not be, it took the traditional pure, orthodox, you can only train in one style, took it out. You know, that got people's minds understand now you can't do that. But at the same token, somebody who does karate, whatever style, like me, I love karate. I love what I do. I will not do anything. I love Kenpo. I love Ed Parker. I love that man. You know, I tried really hard to honor him and, you know, some of his principles. But I like it because I like it, not because it's cool. Does that make sense? I like karate because I like karate. I like Korean martial arts because I train in Korea, and I like the Korean martial arts because I like the Korean martial arts. So anybody now who likes karate or whatever is not doing it because they think they're going to learn something where you can kill somebody. They're learning it because they like their. That's the two good things I think that MMA brought to the martial arts world.
Do you see a change in the students because of it? And so in the way that I kind of see it, I see MMA as its own thing. I don't see it as a martial art, so to speak. All right,
agreed.
In the regards that you don't necessarily get the same, how would I word it, respect or maybe not so much tradition, but there's a different attitude.
I see what you're getting at.
With the martial arts, with the MMA versus your traditional martial arts, in that maybe the MMA is more trying to, you know, push the theatrics and the competition side.
Competition, yeah.
And so that kind of, you know, since you're focused on trying to win, you're less focused on, trying to be a better person, you know, have a better spirit.
Okay, number one. When I was younger, all I cared about was whether I could fight. I did little smokers and things like that. And, you know, I used to do a lot of banging, you know, going to different schools and, you know, doing little challenge. I say with air quotes, challenge matches. It's funny now because I was just a dumb kid. But, that mentality is essential for kids. So I don't think there's such a problem with it, especially for young kids. If I'm 56, if I want to go out and compete that became my focus. You know, if I lived, you know, I got bad, you know, bad health. If I lived, it probably would be not a great use of my time. At 56, I'm very happy learning karate. I'm going back and learning kata. I hated kata forever. So for their age, I think it's very good. You know, I think it's always existed in some form. It was kickboxing before that, boxing before that, full contact karate. I think there's always been a venue for that. The only difference is MMA does a great job of combining the grappling and the striking. But I think if you're 21, of course that's going to matter. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like there's going to be some 21-year-olds that don't care about that. They just want to train or they just want to learn. But it's a necessary venue, so I don't have a problem with it. They've done a really good job. I really respect MMA because they don't karate and, you know, well done karate. If it's well done, I mean, if it's still gets a voice in, if it works, they'll use it in the MMA. I like that, you know. And like I said, I've known some MMA guys that I couldn't have asked for nicer guys. You know what I'm saying? And if I had a problem with them, it was just personality clashes. You know what I'm saying? So I've had a good relationship with myself. I've had good experiences online. I've had a couple MMA people like, oh, Campbell, I'll get you killed. And I'm like, hey, man, I'm 56. I don't even care what you think, you know? And I usually become friends with them because usually they're pretty good guys. So that's number one, is that it's just the age. I mean, I would rather have a 22-year-old have a venue like MMA than pretending like they're, just learning character. When you start getting older, then it starts mattering more, the character development. But, if you do the old school karate, as I learned it back in the early 80s, you know, 70s, 80s, that stuff was supposed to be pretty hard hitting. Okay. It was supposed to be, you know, it was so well done karate is going to have concepts that will transfer over to MMA. Okay. And MMA has done a great job transferring because it brings, like, let's say somebody hits 28, 29, wants to learn karate. They're going to bring some really good skills from MMA. Like I said, my father was a college wrestling coach. He loved karate. He loved Kenpo. He said it was a tremendous fighting art, okay? Because he understood that, you know, because he knew how to grab somebody and, you know, on a seriously wrestle with them and do, like, you know, army judo or whatever, you know, the stuff you learn in the army. And you know, he could do what he had to do and then start doing some of those gouges and rips. I mean, you know, he understood how good it was. So, so number two, it does a really good job of integrating. Good karate should be able to integrate into MMA, and good MMA should be able to integrate into karate. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So realistic, like Parker, Parker did judo and boxing. He loved contact stuff. Okay. Parker was a tough contact guy. Same with a lot of the Kempo guys. Like some of these old Kempo guys floating around are just, you know, tougher than most people could even imagine, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure.
So, but the third thing is, yes, I wish that MMA, there's some segments of MMA that I wish would go back to the more respectful, you know, humble side of it. But that's, I would not say that that's the preponderance of MMA. I'd say most MMA are okay. You know, as long as we, what we need to do, I'm not a Kempo person that thinks we need to make MMA light. I do not believe that. Okay. I believe we should do Kempo as it stands. You know, if you want to do it like I do, which is, I believe in simplifying Kempo. I think Kempo's gotten way too complicated. That's my thing. Okay. I think Kempo's way too complicated. I've had people strongly disagree. Some famous Kempo people do not agree with me on that. People say they dislike my attitude about it. That's so I, with me, I think it needs to be a lot more simple. So that I'll argue about all day long. But I do think that what we as Kempo people need to do is we need to keep producing good, hard-hitting Kempo. That Kempo is if you look at the Kempo's history, we've had some pretty good people come out of Kempo. Tracy and Parker, some pretty tough people. So I think that we just need to continue producing more time doing hard sparring and hard training, and less time worrying about A, where we fit, you know, like where people like us or not, and B, we need to make sure that we're learning this is my blurb, this is where a smaller number of techniques, but learn them really well. Okay.
Gotcha.
And you can disagree or agree, you know, you can say your opinion or whatever. I very much respect your opinion on things.
Yeah.
You're one of my favorite people in Kempo.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. All right. So to kind of head towards our final questions here. Mm-hmm. First one being, do you have a favorite technique or a favorite couple of techniques?
I don't know why I like parting wings. I don't know why it's one of my favorite. Huh?
I
like it. I see it as ripping out the eyes or attacking the throat and then moving and doing the parting wings would be one of them. If I had to choose, I do not do long four. Okay. We don't do long four. I'm very familiar with it. If I had to choose a kata for me, a Kempo kata that I like the best, it would I'd have to say long two. I love the concepts of long two. I think that I think people need to spend a lot of time doing that, because that's a really good, in my opinion, a very good, has really good kihon, good basics, good simplicity, everything about it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, so that'd be my favorite kata, and my favorite set is finger set. Finger set two, probably.
Very nice.
I like those gouges and, you know. But the thing about Kempo, and that I want to say about finger set or any of these, if you don't have, you need to have, that's why I like MMA so much, why I like boxing, and why I like old school karate, because karate was the same way, is if you don't have that same ability to throw jab, cross hooks, you know, if you don't have some of that aliveness, or I hate that word aliveness because everybody uses it, but you know, that if you can't throw a halfway decent jab, you're not going to get anybody in the eye. You know what I'm saying? Exactly. So you need to spend a lot of your time sparring and actually doing really like actual physical hands-on drills. And then the stuff from finger set will work really well, you know?
Okay. Gotcha. And so our final question is, if there is anyone living or not, fictional or non-fictional, that you could train with, who would that be?
Okay. I'm going to name about five. Is that okay?
That, of course.
Oh, shit, I'm gonna go on a list, okay? First and foremost, of course, Ed Parker. What can you say? I have every single Ed Parker video I can get. My master Robert Hermanson's told me about him. Gary Cox had met him, and you know, he just was the guy is criminally underrated. The one thing, I'm not blaming MMA people, but I know a lot of people online that talk about what they would do to Grandmaster Parker, you know, what they would do to him. You know what I'm saying? Like, if they got a hold of him, I will guarantee you that man was scary. Okay. That man was scary. The other one is Jeff Speakman. You know, I idolize Jeff Speakman. I probably would turn into a bowl of Jello. I probably would. I'd probably just like, Mr. Speakman, sir. You know, I have Asperger's and I'm a little shy. That's one of the reasons why martial arts was so good for me, is because having Asperger's, that's a mild form of autism. I was always a little bit awkward. I was always, I got lucky. I dated a lot. You know, I've been able to, I was able to go through, my bachelor's and most of my master's because of my Asperger's. You know, I have an ability to conceptually think, but I sometimes get a little bit nervous or a little bit shy, and I would just be so shy of Master Speakman, I wouldn't even know what to do. But he'd be another one. Now I want to clarify, I do not teach grappling, but I love how he saw the importance of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I love the art. You know what I'm saying? I love the art of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I just don't. And I won't change. I have no interest in teaching. I would just tell somebody, go with a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu person and do that.
That's fine, yeah.
Another one. Okay, now I'm going to probably get Kenpo people hating me here. But what inspired me? There's two things that inspired me to simplify Kenpo. First off, Gary Cox and Robert Hermanson believed in a simpler Kenpo, both of them. They believed it had gotten too complicated. There's an art called Weichiru. I don't know if you ever heard. I think we talked about it. You and I talked about it. It's a very simplistic Okinawan art that has, it is not the same as Kenpo, but there are concepts that you can see in it that would be similar to Kenpo. They're a very simplified system. I'm using, of course, the Kenpo concept and, but I would love to train with Kane Weichi, the founder of the system. I believe it's Kanbun, I think, is his son, and Kane is the father. I would like to train with the father, the founder of him. The other one is Masoyama. Masoyama. I love Kyokushin. I love all that. And the third one, I love the Korean martial arts. I do teach Kenpo, but I really have integrated a lot of the more combative components of Korean karate into what I teach in Kenpo. And also, I teach Hapkido too. I'm actually a Hapkido instructor too. But there's a guy named Dok Sung Son. He was one of the pioneers of Taekwondo. Muda Kwan, I believe he was. But he taught that really hard. It was still Korean. It was still Taekwondo. He would be the other one that I would love to train with, And then there's one more. I love this man. His name is Doc Ron Chappelle. Okay. I idolize him. He is so nice to me because, like, I have a, some academic background. He's got the, I love his academic background. I like to even, I like to do cut and paste research into Parker and into whatever, I try to be pretty, reasonably correct in what I'm saying. I try to validate what I say. And Doc Ron Chappelle, his physical is excellent. He's got excellent technique, but his academic understanding is just amazing. And I would love, I just appreciate him so much. He's always shown me so much kindness, so much respect. I'm nothing, I'm just another Kenpo instructor out there, but he always answers my questions. He's always shown me respect. I will always love that man, and he's correct on things. I may say, academically, I believe that karate is it's obvious that Kenpo is Kung Fu, Hawaiian martial arts, Chinese martial arts, of course, Okinawan, Japanese, blend of all that. I put the percentage of karate higher than most would. Does that make sense? It's not a pure karate system, but the proportion, the ratio of karate in my Gary world, GRG world, is higher. And I may say to, Doc Chappelle, as I understand it, and he never mocks me or anything, he'll just say, either yes or no, or, he's just a really good guy. I love that man. To me, he's my favorite Kenpo. I idolize Larry Tatum. I think he's great, but my body type is, he's got more of a real fast, the guys watching him is literally like watching, it's like watching Shakespeare write a poem, to me, Larry Tatum is a Shakespeare poem of Kenpo. So I don't relate with his movements at all, but I really like him. I have more of a hard Korean, and my movements are a little more hard. And the last one is Mohammed Tabatabai. I think he is just, I'm a large guy like he is. And I have watched his videos and, you know, a very nice guy. And I don't do it right. I am not, but I try to have some of the same concepts he does. I weakly empathetically try.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. Well, I thank you for your time, and thank you for being on and sharing your story with me and whoever else may be listening to this. I'm just overjoyed to get to talk to you, and also get to talk to all these other wonderful people
that are
going to be on.
I'm gonna say something about you to the Kempo. I love this man. This man, Reggie Darden, represents the highest end of human nature.
No. Thank
he
you.
Represents the our higher ends of ourselves. He's the man trying to bring together people and just bring love. And I just appreciate you. I don't think three people. I'll be surprised if three people listen to me. But but I am honored to get a chance to share, and I'm flattered that you think I was worth the time to share. So